Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. The General Assembly adjourned earlier this summer, but state lawmakers have come back to Raleigh for special sessions, and another one is planned. Meanwhile, a new report from the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center takes a closer look at the two-year budget passed by the House and Senate, despite a veto from the governor, and finds it is the story of unwise tax cuts and missed opportunities. Marian Johnson with the Budget and Tax Center joins us now with the details. Well, Marian, thanks for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Budget and Tax Center, of course, has been reporting quite a bit on what's been happening in our budget and tax world in North Carolina. A recent report on the final budget sort of goes into detail about how lawmakers did, and let's want to talk about some specifics. But overall, how would you characterize the two-year budget that was passed this year?
It's just another in a series of wrong choices for North Carolina, honestly. So the budget is a two-year budget, as you said, and it basically sets the roadmap for the next 2 years. Unfortunately, it just continues a trend of prioritizing tax cuts that we really can't afford over building an economy that works for everyone as opposed to just for the wealthy. We're going to get to a point where we can't afford basic things like infrastructure or public education.
Yeah, I guess the tax cut is one of the big stories, which it's not the first time, obviously, they've cut taxes. When you add it all up, it's staggering.
Right. So if you add up just this budget alone, when all of the tax cuts go into effect, that'll lose us about $1 billion in state funding a year. If you add that to all of the tax cuts that they've been passing for the last several years, it's actually going to add up to about $3.5 billion that we lose a year.
I know for people who are listening that it's a number they can't even sort of comprehend. But then
right.
At the same time, we hear that we may not be able to have enough money to pay for class size reduction or every single teacher can't get a raise. So that has
right.
dramatic consequences.
Absolutely. And so I keep saying that it's a choice, right? Like this is a choice that legislators are making. So when they say things like, oh, well, we can only afford to do so much, or, you know, we can't prioritize everything, they're making a choice to put us in that situation. And so, yeah, one of the wins that we saw out of this budget was that they funded a new teacher pay plan that's going to get us closer to the national average. Unfortunately, the way the budget is set up now, we actually can't afford that teacher pay plan for more than about a year. And so we just really can't afford to keep any sort of promises, and we really can't afford to get ourselves to the national average. And like you said, cover class size decreases and that sort of thing.
I guess the General Assembly's own staff is pointing out that this isn't sustainable.
It's coming from so many different voices. It's even coming from, you know, inside the General Assembly that this is just really the wrong choice. And unfortunately, legislators seem just devoted to these tax cuts.
I want to get to some more budget specifics, but for people who are listening who are hearing about all these tax cuts, a lot of the folks who are listening probably didn't get much of one.
Right. The tax cuts that we're seeing are mostly targeted at the high-income households. And so we're seeing people who are already doing pretty well who are getting tax cuts, whereas people who are middle class, people who are struggling to make ends meet, are really not seeing any sorts of benefits. And so if you're a low-income household, you're not seeing any sort of tax cut at all. Middle-income households, I think, are seeing tax cuts of maybe $100, and then we're seeing thousands of dollars of tax cuts thrown at high-income households. And so it's unsustainable.
I guess that's the real question, the last thing about tax cuts. It does seem unsustainable. Legislative staff says that, but legislative leaders keep saying, well, we still have budget surpluses, and they act like everything's okay.
Yeah, the budget surpluses are sort of based on really constricted numbers anyway. And so we have more than we were anticipating, but it's still not enough. And we're also seeing the budget surpluses, what we have, are not being used at all. And so we're putting all of this surplus into the rainy day fund as opposed to actually paying for things that we can't afford to do anymore. So we keep on slashing budgets and we keep on packing money away. But then when a rainy day actually comes, like with Hurricane Matthew, for instance, lawmakers are reluctant to use any of the actual funds. And so I'm really not sure what we're getting out of a budget surplus when we're not using it.
The other thing we hear all the time is that some budgets have increased, but as the Budget and Tax Center frequently points out, if you adjust for inflation, we're still not doing what we should do.
Right. And so one thing that they definitely point to is public school funding. And so they say, oh, you know, like we've increased funding for public schools, except we're not increasing enough. I mean, enrollment is ballooning and people are coming to the state and people are having kids. And so we're seeing a lot of pressure put on the public schools that we have, but we're not seeing the funding match up with that at all.
Another interesting thing I just find interesting is that the shifting of money that used to be from the federal government that used to pay for different things. Now we're sort of filling in holes that the state doesn't want to pay for.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually a real point of tension because we're seeing the federal budget, I mean, that the president put forward sees huge budget cuts from the federal level. And so if we keep on depending on federal funding, we're going to end up in a really terrible situation because that federal funding is really not guaranteed anymore. And so we'll see a cut in federal funding as well as cuts in state funding. And so we're just going to be sort of stranded economically.
When you look at the numbers from the Budget and Tax Center and other places, even in legislative staff, all these seem so clear. I wonder, do you think the public sort of gets what's happening?
I think it's hard. I mean, obviously, this is stuff that's hard to wrap your mind around. I mean, like $3.5 billion is a lot of money to wrap your mind around. And I think it's also easy to just hear tax cut and think, oh, that's great. And sort of, you know, theoretically, a tax cut sounds fantastic. Yeah, I think that part of the problem is that the public isn't hearing the right message, that they're hearing the sort of Carolina comeback message or the tax cuts are great for everyone message, when really the message is, you know, we're approaching disaster.
Approaching disaster. We have an example out in the United States of what happens if this continues, which is Kansas.
Right, exactly. I think Kansas is the best example of the fact that the state legislature reversed their tax cuts just this year because they were unsustainable. I mean, they had to close their public schools for a number of days because they actually couldn't afford to keep the lights on. And this is because Governor Brownback and a number of legislators were just dedicated to this tax cuts. You know, they're trying to get down to 0% tax rate. Yeah, they realized that this was absolutely the wrong choice. And I think that they're going to be dealing with the ramifications of that for several years.
Yeah, for folks in southeastern North Carolina, I guess they're going through the Gen X controversy in their water, the disaster, really, trying to figure out how to get it out. The governor's requested a lot of money for the Department of Environmental Quality. That budget has been cut. There are all these examples that keep popping up.
Right. I think they're just everywhere you look, you're seeing budgets get cut where people really, really need support. And I think people who are economically vulnerable, people who are struggling to make ends meet, are really getting stranded, like I said, and left with really no recourse.
Do we need to change the way we do the budget? I mean, it feels like maybe it is choices you mentioned. The first thing they did when they came to town was say, we're going to cut taxes, and then trying to figure it out after that.
Well, I think that's the problem. I think if you set, I mean, the budget is sort of a set of priorities, right? So if your priority is cutting taxes, then that's just what your budget is going to look like. If your priority is actually, you know, helping working families, then I think it's actually just really easy to follow your priorities. But unfortunately, the legislators are really focused on tax cuts over everything else.
What are some of the things that they could or should have done to help working families or can do in the future?
We're seeing income tax supports completely evaporate from the budget. And so things like the earned income tax credit, we don't have anymore. And that's sort of been held against these tax cuts and saying like, oh, well, we're giving a tax cut to everyone. We don't need the earned income tax credit anymore. But that is actually a targeted tax credit that helps specifically working families, especially low and low to middle income families. And so things like that, I mean, things that are there to actually help low-income and middle-income families are being eradicated in favor of sort of blanket policies that really just help the wealthy.
It's interesting that the budget is doing that at the same time. They've refused to expand Medicaid. They refused to look at our unemployment insurance. So this is not a new theme.
Right. This has been going on since about 2010. And it just the same messages keep on coming out that, well, we can't afford unemployment benefits. We can't afford infrastructure. We can't afford any sort of Social Security net. But it's because they're choosing tax cuts. Again, we can't afford it because they've made it so that we can't afford it. And so if we could even reverse some of the tax cuts, we'd be able to afford so much more.
Mixed news about the hurricane recovery. They did put more money in hurricane recovery finally, but it still falls, it seems to fall well
drastically short of what we need. Yeah, and this is, again, a theme that we requested, I think, about we need something like $1 billion for full recovery and rebuilding efforts. And we're getting, I can't remember the number now, but we're getting, I think, just maybe $20 million. And so that means that people can't rebuild their houses. People can't move back home. People are just sort of staying in hotels and just sort of waiting for something more.
And before I let you go, I want to ask you about another, which is sort of a symptom of the same thing we're talking about, another BTC Prosperity Watch report about student loan debt. Tell us how that ties into all these things.
So public funding for public universities in North Carolina has actually been declining since 2008. And so we see funding for public universities declining. And when that happens, tuition has to go up. The burden is really pushed onto tuition paying students. And since median income hasn't increased in the last 10 years, people have to take out more student loans. And so we're seeing student loan debt rise from, I think it was an average of 16,000 to 25,000 in the last 10 years. And that's because our public universities are becoming unaffordable. We recently looked at a report from the Brookings Institute that said that people of color, like students of color and their families, are taking on student loan debt more frequently, and they're also taking on way more student loan debt. And so this is another case of bad choices from the legislature hurting communities who are already economically vulnerable. Families of color have about twice the amount of student loan debt that white families do when their children graduate from college. After 4 years, that gap balloons. I think it goes from about 7,000 to about 25,000. And so you see families of color shouldering these huge amounts of debt just so they can get their kids through college. And then when they emerge from college, I mean, it's not as though in North Carolina we're really seeing that sort of become a ladder to economic security, that we're not seeing sort of investments in communities so that they can get a good paying job, so that they can climb out of whatever situation they're in and really achieve economic security.
Well, it's fascinating and depressing, but maybe things will change. Thanks for what you're doing, and we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Up next, the push to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Stay tuned.